Hello. This is the Winchester and District Talking newspaper for the week ending Friday the 25th of October. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Lorna Chorley and Michael Turner. And your readers today are Sheila Shepherd.
Hello.
And Michael Wyard.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Tom Williams. Now, this week's announcements, we start with several events in and around Winchester. First of all, the charity Christmas card shop opens at the Guildhall, Winchester, on Tuesday the 29th of October and will be there until Saturday December the 14th. Opening hours are 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. On Wednesday the 30th of October, there's a talk entitled Engaging with God, Worship, Ways and Words at the United Church, Jury Street, Winchester at 12:30 p.m. Sandwiches and refreshments are available. On Thursday the 31st of October, there is a free open day at Bishopstoke Community Centre with information, advice and support for the visually impaired. This is from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Further details are available on 023 8064 6380. That's 023 8064 6380. And on the same day, Thursday the 31st of October at 7:30 p.m. at Winchester Discovery Centre, there's a talk entitled Vampires That Refuse to Die. On Friday the 1st of November, there's the monthly drop-in in Memory Cafe run by the Winchester Live at Home scheme, offering support for dementia. This is from 10:30 to 12:30 p.m. And also on Friday the 1st of October, the autumn concert at the Winchester College School of Music includes works by Beethoven, Chopin and Fauré. Doors open at 7 p.m. and the cost is £22. The 55th annual Winchester Roundtable Bonfire and Fireworks event is being held on Saturday the 2nd of November. The programme is 6 p.m. entertainment on the Broadway outside the Guildhall, 6:30 p.m. torchlight procession to bonfire site at North Walls Recreation Ground, 7:15 p.m. bonfire lit by the Mayor of Winchester, 7:45 p.m. fireworks start. This is a ticketed event. Tickets are available in advance from www.winchesterbonfire.co.uk at £3 per person. Any unsold tickets will be sold on the day at £5 per head. Finally, on stage at the Theatre Royal, from the 7th to the 9th of November, is Alice in Wonderland, and from the 12th to the 16th of November, Winchester Operatic Society are in Gilbert and Sullivan's Patience. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 25th of October at 7:45 a.m. and begins at 5:55 p.m. British summertime ends on Sunday the 26th of October and clocks are moved back 1 hour. Consequently, on Wednesday the 30th of October, lighting up time ends at 6:55 a.m. and begins at 4:44 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received, please telephone Lynn Parker on 01962 862 826. That's 01962 862 826. The main headlines this week are: Now main city roads could be 20 mph zones. More job cuts face axe in more jobs face axe in county cuts. And elderly missing out on their entitlements. So may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Sheila?
Our main city roads could be 20 miles an hour zones, but AA warns move will be detrimental to the city. Traffic could be restricted to 20 miles an hour in Winchester's key inner core streets, including North Walls and St George's Street. The proposal also covers most of Hyde, and it is understood the measure could be implemented by April next year. The latest plan to slow traffic would be a first for the city centre, although the new limits have already been approved for city suburbs Highcliffe, Winnell and Stanmore. Hampshire County Council has received £150,000 from the local Sustainable Transport Fund, though it is likely to need only half of that, and will work in partnership with Winchester City Council to implement the scheme. But motoring organisation, the AA, has warned against the measure, saying speed should not be reduced on main routes. A spokesman said, "We don't have a problem in residential areas where people want it, but when you start putting 20 miles an hour limit on busy arterial routes, you slow down the traffic. And when you do that, you're slowing down the pace of the city. You should have to rewrite bus timetables. Firms that deliver would have to reassess. Our feeling is that it's better to keep arterial routes as they are, so the traffic is flowing through more efficiently." There is support for the move from the Winchester BID, and most councillors favour it. Councillor Victoria Weston, Winchester's portfolio holder for Built Environment, said, "Such limits have been shown to improve quality of life for local residents, shoppers and visitors, and to improve traffic flow and safety for drivers, cyclists and pedestrians." But Councillor Robert Sanders said, "Outside schools, I think it's a great idea, but for the city centre, we have national speed limits. What are we spending all that money for when we haven't got any evidence that it makes any difference? As a fiscal conservative, the case is not proven to me." Councillor Ian Tate, whose ward would be affected, questioned whether the limits were enforceable. "My view is that we need to be guided by the police. I want to know what the police are going to do if motor vehicles are exceeding that speed." Superintendent Chris Brown, Hampshire's head of roads policing, said 20 miles an hour schemes are generally supported by the police if they meet certain criteria. Schemes should not require routine police enforcement if they're on the right roads with the right overall design, he said. If there was an issue on a scheme that had been well planned and met all the criteria, then it would be assessed and prioritised against other risk sites across the area. There could be a range of solutions, from community speed watch through to safety camera van enforcement. In May, county bosses put their residential 20 pilot for Stanmore on hold when residents snubbed a consultation with just 16% of questionnaires completed. But Highcliffe, Winnell and Stanmore are all expected to see the new limits implemented in the coming weeks, following September's executive decision by County Councillor Sean Woodward. A two-week exhibition on the new city centre proposal will be held early next month, but it remains unclear what the decision-making process will be, and the County Council has yet to respond to a request for comment. Council staff will answer questions at the Discovery Centre on Thursday, November the 7th, from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. and Tuesday, November the 12th, from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m.
More jobs face the axe in county cuts. Hampshire County Councils could be forced to slash 1,800 more jobs in the latest round of cuts, it was claimed this week. Council chiefs have confirmed their initial targets to save £80 million will go up to £90 million because of further reductions in government funding. It means the county's Tory chiefs are again seeking voluntary redundancies from its 40,000-strong workforce, despite already cutting 1,800 jobs and £130 million from the budget in the past 2 years. The jobs cull, branded reckless by unions, will begin at the end of this month, with voluntary redundancy being offered to some staff and all senior managers within the council. Council leader Roy Perry said the intention is to shave a further 10% of the senior management team on top of the 25% who have already gone to achieve the budget by April 2015. He says he's unable to confirm exact numbers of the jobs that will be lost. However, UKIP group leader Ray Finch said a senior council officer had already revealed it would be 1,800. Speaking to the Chronicle, Councillor Finch said the economy is in a bad way and we do need to look to make savings wherever possible. However, we have looked at the numbers and we do not believe it is in our best interest to cut close to 2,000 jobs. These people have built up skills working for the council over the years, and once they are gone, we'll not get them back. The same goes for the services we cut. A cabinet report confirms county leaders will discuss redundancies at a meeting next Monday. The report said it is anticipated that once again, voluntary redundancy exercises will be carried out across most services, and by the time Cabinet considers this report, these initiatives will have begun in different parts of our corporate services activity and is being rolled out across other departments. But unions have called for the authorities' £400 million reserves to be used to avoid the cuts. Tim Cutter, branch secretary for Hampshire Unison, said cutting 1,800 jobs would be an absolute catastrophe. He said, if this is the case, it would be a reckless move by the council at a time when they have £490 million in reserve. It would mean the council would not be able to provide frontline services, in my view, for the elderly, the vulnerable, and other essential services that people really need. Councillor Roy Perry described the situation as a big challenge. He said the use of reserves continues to play an important part of the strategy to close the funding gap. They are being used to pay for the transformation of services and to drive out inefficiencies for this next stage of savings.
Elderly missing out on their entitlements. Poorest pensioners urged to claim benefits. Hundreds of Winchester's elderly are living in unnecessary poverty, a new report warns. The study shows that 1,500 of the city's poorest pensioners are missing out on benefits that could significantly improve their standard of living. It comes as help groups report growing numbers of pensioners struggling to make ends meet. Philip Vose, chairman of Age UK Winchester, said his organisation had helped pensioners claim more than £50,000 in entitlements this year. Shopping, utilities, gas and water are all going up beyond the rate of inflation, and pensions are not going up in line with those costs, he said. A lot of older people who live on their own do not have family to advise them, and the paperwork is quite complicated. I would like to see that simplified. Jenny Meadows, chief executive of Winchester Citizens Advice Bureau, said, "Even if people come in for other things, we always do a benefit check to see what people are entitled to. But the fact is that a lot of people do not want to claim benefit. They do not see state retirement pension as a benefit, which it is, and I do not feel comfortable claiming benefits, and do not feel comfortable claiming benefits, even though they're entitled to them. Those eligible could see their pensions rise to at least £145.40 a week." Victoria Richards of Independent Age said, "In some cases, pension credit can also passport pensioners to other benefits, such as council tax and housing benefit. And when claimed with attendance allowances, it can almost double some people's incomes." Nationwide, up to 38% of pensioners, that's around 1.6 million people, are failing to claim the benefit. Tony Coates, Winchester's portfolio holder for neighbourhoods and environment, said that the problem is the government's responsibility. Pension credit comes from the Department for Work and Pensions, but it's a question of bringing horses to water. You can't advise, you can advise people to do certain things, but they do not necessarily do it. A spokesman for the Department for Work and Pensions said people can find out about entitlements at libraries and groups like Age UK and the CAB. The CAB can also make people aware. The information is also available online, so we're doing what we can. Independent Age has launched a free Wise Guide book to help pensioners put more cash in their pockets. To order one, call 0845 262 1863. That's 0845 262 1863. That concludes the headlines, and we continue with notices of deaths. The following deaths have been announced. Arnold, Kenneth Jack Arnold, peacefully aged 85, at Royal Hampshire County Hospital. Brisbane, Charlene Ty Brisbane, aged 67. Hancock, Peter Hancock, peacefully at Royal Hampshire County Hospital. And Simcox, Alice Hall Simcox, aged 97. Christian Comment this week is read by Sheila. Thank you, Sheila.
And Christian Comment is entitled Respect for the Aged is a Sign of Godliness and is written by Terry E. Hemming. Listen to your father who begot you, and do not despise your mother when she is old. So says the Book of Proverbs. In fact, the Bible says a lot about respect for the elderly and claims grey hair is a crown of glory. It is gained in a righteous life. As a priest, I am privileged to visit many elderly, some of whom are housebound, some in residential homes, and some enjoying an active life caring for other members of their family. Some have visits from family or friends daily, while others do not. Of those living on their own, the most common request I hear is that it would be nice to share a meal with others. And it is good there are opportunities for that to happen, both with people of a similar age or being invited to a family meal. So I do not have quite as negative view as Mr. Hunt, but he's right that loneliness can be a very real problem for those who are not so mobile and who have lost family and friends who were their contemporaries. However, our visiting is not to be done condescendingly. It's important that we recognise the value they have as people who have experienced more than we have. I have great respect, especially for those who have endured hardship in a way many of us have not. I love hearing stories from the past, yes, even when they're repeated regularly, because it takes me to where I have not been. Yet we recognise that our society is rather different from that of 50 years ago, and many move away from their parents' home and cannot provide the care that non-working women provided then. As I visit, I see the good work done by carers who enable people to stay in their homes and by carers working in residential homes. They often have a sense of humour and cheerfulness when dealing with people whose minds as well as their bodies are deteriorating, which many of us would find quite difficult. A good proportion come from abroad, and without them our older friends would not survive. Most do not earn large salaries. Perhaps, if we are to care for our elderly, we should begin by caring for the carers and rewarding them suitably. Just as we insist that schools are adequately equipped and staffed, we need to ask the same for our residential homes. The Bible requires respect for the elderly as a sign of godliness and instructs us, "You shall rise before the aged and defer to the old, and you shall fear your God. I am the Lord." This was written by Terry E. Hemming.
Now we move on to letters from the editor, and the first letter is read by Michael. Thank you, Michael.
It's entitled Local Beauty Spot Can't Be Destroyed, and it comes from Russ Evans, who lives in Laburnum Drive in Kingsworthy. Sir, I write to comment about your article of October the 17th, re Drew Smith's proposal to build a further 83 homes on the top field area of Kingsworthy. Your article said that this could provide housing for 1,000 people on the Kingsworthy waiting list. This is surely a misprint, as it infers that the village population will increase by over 20%. The reality is that the waiting list is at present less than 100. Drew Smith have, however, already built 25 affordable homes on Top Field, and the Phase 2 proposal of a further 83 would almost certainly be followed by a Phase 3 and a Phase 4, etc., etc. The area they want to build on is regularly used by all residents for recreational purposes. It is a local beauty spot and also a haven for wildlife. The idea of a development which will destroy the tranquility forever and introduce through the roads, which will create major traffic problems on what are minor roads, is, in my opinion, quite ludicrous and must not be allowed. I accept that a limited number of houses need to be built, but there are more sensible sites on which to do this. Drew Smith are not at present prepared to listen to reason. Is it because they have already purchased land on the Top Field beauty spot? I don't believe that the Kingsworthy residents will readily accept their proposal. Russ Evans.
Under the heading, Our Environment is Being Trashed, Nina Bailey writes, Sir, here we go again. Another garden grab has been given the green light for dense, incongruous overdevelopment. Not satisfied with concreting over Barton Farm, Winchester City Council has given permission for Alfred Holmes to build 9 dwellings following demolition of the existing house. This time it's Berwick Avenue. Having attended the planning committee meeting as a very adversely affected neighbour, I was shocked to realise the planners and developers had given virtually no heed to our objections. I also sensed that committee members dared not object for fear of the consequences of the decision going to appeal. I believe the approval was unanimous, regardless of political allegiance. The proposal and recommended approval smacked of a mixture of greed and the politics of envy. Has no one considered the effect on the elderly and housebound, who cannot easily escape the prolonged torture over many months during the construction phase alone? This scheme will destroy a lovely, peaceful and healthy environment which my family and neighbours have enjoyed for years. Once gone, it's gone forever. It's clear that our environment is gradually being trashed by those in positions of power, and that Winchester is becoming a much less desirable place to live. No doubt these developments will attract commuters from outside the city, and the overcrowded trains will not be able to cope. That's from Nina Bailey, Berwick Avenue, Winchester.
And this letter from John Miller is about the plans for the new leisure centre. Entitled, The Limitation is Only in the Mind. Sir, it is clear that Winchester City Council has, in its wisdom, considered only 2 options which have been widely discussed in these columns, but there is a third. Move Winchester City Football Club from the council-owned ground at Abbots Barton to the Tesco-owned Garrison Ground at Bar End, where there are numerous pitches which suits the academy, plus pitches at King George V playing field if necessary. Build a dual aspect stand and facilities on the grass adjacent to the homes, straight off the stadium track. A facility inexplicably omitted in the planning of the track, as no National League fixture could be held there. Should Winchester and District AC progress to the standard they have previously achieved, they would have to hold a home meeting at Southampton or Portsmouth. Killing 2 birds with 1 stone is always a good idea. No planning issues either. The leisure centre is of sound structure and can be easily reconfigured if the pool was moved to the tennis hard service area, facilitating a standalone wet area and, in all probability, a 50-metre pool. Move the tennis court, etc., to the football ground or swimming pool and leave the tennis courts where they are. Keep it simple. The income from the leisure centre would continue with minimal disruption, saving the city council a considerable sum. Winchester is expanding north, not south. So let's keep our land green and pleasant. We need more parks, not fewer. Leisure comes in all guises. Option 3 keeps the status quo and offers more leisure facilities for everyone. The limitation is only in the mind. John Miller, Wessex Drive, Winchester.
This next letter comes from Caroline Scott, who lives in King Alfred Place in Hyde in Winchester, and it's headed, "No Confidence in Wise Conclusion." "Sir, having attended the meeting organised by Councillor Wood on September the 26th, I turned with interest and hope to his article in the Chronicle, October the 10th, and I am now even more anxious. He considered the meeting was dominated by those against the leisure centre plan, and a balanced debate was impossible. I'd ask him to reflect on whose responsibility it is to chair and lead a meeting with clarity and purpose if they convened it in the first place. He and Mr. Tilbury, whose attitude towards the audience could at best be described as arrogant, are capable of refuting their responsibilities in this way, and then I have no confidence in there being a wise conclusion." He continued in his article published in the very paper whose integrity he rubbished in the first 5 minutes of the meeting that, put simply, the council needs to decide. I would suggest this sums up what Councillor Wood is intent on doing, thinking simply. Where is the leadership and vision to resolve a complex problem? Has it been considered that we could have two centres splitting the traffic, potentially lightening the load of another 300 cars in the city centre, and recognising the difference between both purpose and user group that would lie with the creation of both a leisure centre and a sports centre? Has the council considered discussing with Tesco some kind of partnership that would benefit both contributors and alleviate costs? Should David Lloyd be approached to inquire whether they would purchase some or all of the present river park? If Barton Farm is to be built, has a site there been appraised? Most importantly, has any consultation taken place, apart from the rather rude private chats Councillor Wood and Mr. Tilbury indulged in whilst people were putting forward their points of view? Both need to learn that respect is a two-way street. Theirs, for a concerned and anxious and, yes, vociferous audience, was sadly lacking. Caroline Scott from King Alfred Place.
On the question of building on car parks, Rosemary Poole writes, "Sir, so the council would like to know how we feel about the availability of parking in the city. I understand that with the revamp of the railway station area and possible demolition of the existing council offices in Colebrook Street and their replacement with new offices, developers and architects are lining up with glee. Officers are looking at building on the car parks in Gladstone Street and the cattle market. I don't know what planet Steve Tilbury lives on when he says the cattle market car park is not punching its weight, but I've been there on two occasions recently, and both times there were only three spaces and only one or two in the adjoining Worthy Lane car park. It is madness to be considering building on this car park, especially with a view to the extra 2,000 homes on Barton Farm. Where does the council think these new commuters will park? It greatly irritates me that when I have a suitcase to carry, I have to take a taxi to the station in the week, in spite of paying over £2,000 in council taxes. If the council offices are to be rebuilt, the proposal being considered, eventually, is to put houses on Colebrook Street car park. What? This is invaluable for residents and visitors who attend events at the Guildhall and Cathedral, or who eat out in the city in the evening. It should be doubled in size, not built over. There's also a rumour that Cheddle Street car park will be built on. I imagine this will be a tragedy for residents who have no off-street parking and who must surely rely on it for themselves and their visitors. It would also affect attendances at the Cheddle Theatre in the same way as has happened at the Theatre Royal with the loss of half their car park some years ago. That was from Mrs. Rosemary Poole, St. James's Villas, Winchester.
And this letter is from Vera Bruty of Manningford Close, Winchester. Winchester will lament this loss. Sir, the report in the Chronicle, October the 10th, that the profits of Carla Homes are set to be boosted after the company won planning permission to build on farmland off Andover Road, came as no surprise to me. I've always known Barton Farm was a big part of their land bank, but hoped the reasons put forward against development on this site would be strong enough to prevent it happening. I can see now how naive I was when profits are to be made. In 1989, there was just as much need for affordable houses and homes for key workers. Hampshire Affordable Housing Forum, comprising representatives from the 13 district councils, was brought into being by the County Council with the sole aim of finding land suitable for this purpose. I took the minutes at all the meetings and know it met with little success. Their final report, after a year's deliberation, stated there was hardly any land available because it was being bought and held in reserve by developers. Hampshire and Winchester City Councils gave up trying to find land for affordable housing to the detriment of those needing them because they could not compete. Carla Homes have owned Barton Farm for 15 years, and although they have been refused several times, finally conditions are in their favour. Winchester is about to suffer the consequences and, like Oxford and Cambridge, will lament the loss of landscape. Vera Bruty, Manningford Close, Winchester.
If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can telephone 01962 860836. That's 01962 860836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now, looking back, we begin with the news from 200 years ago. Thank you, Michael.
200 years ago, October the 25th, 1813. A second French courier, who was charged with the mail of Bonaparte, was intercepted on the 16th of September near Aachen in Saxony. The letters confirmed the idea of the miserable situation of the French army. One of them, dated Ebersdorf, September the 12th, contains the following paragraph. Your letter reached me 10 days ago in a wretched village where we had to sleep after fighting the whole day. Since the 22nd, our corps has been constantly fighting, wet to the skin. It was we who defended Dresden for 4 days and who saved it. Doubtless we shall, tomorrow, defile into the plain. 150,000 Russians, Prussians or Austrians there await us. A few days since, a quantity of money was discovered in the water in that branch of the Perth Mill Lead that passes between the Mill Street and Blackfriars. A number of persons soon collected, many of whom, eager to get hold of the spoil, got into the water and, after some scrambling, picked it up. An order was immediately issued by the sheriff, requiring those in possession of the money to carry it to the sheriff clerk's office. In consequence thereof, a sum of £171.17, principally in half crowns, has been received. the money is reported to have been thrown away by an old woman to prevent its falling into the hands of their heir.
100 years ago, on the 25th of October 1913, the first item is headed Minimum Wage Plans for Farms. Mm. Letter to the editor from an old tenant farmer on the proposed Lloyd George agricultural land law reforms. As to giving us adequate security on our farms, it is not the landlord we fear, but vexatious legislation. I make bold to assert that neither Mr. Lloyd George nor his supporters can produce a workable minimum wage scheme. But I may say this, that if a minimum wage is thrust upon us, we shall be reluctantly compelled to weed out the weakest, oldest, and most inefficient men on our labour staff. We shall only retain a limited number of the strongest and best workmen, and we shall use the most up-to-date machinery we can purchase. And secondly, a belated egg. A middle-aged bachelor was in a restaurant at breakfast when he notices this inscription on the egg. To whom it may concern, should this meet the eye of some young man who desires to marry a farmer's daughter, 18 years of age, kindly communicate with blank, Sparta, New Jersey. After reading this, he made haste to write to the girl offering marriage, and in a few days received this note. Too late. I am married now and have 4 children.
And 50 years ago, October the 26th, 1963, earth tremor hits Hampshire. Reports of an earth tremor were received from a wide area of southeast Hampshire early yesterday, Friday morning. It appears to have been most violent in the district immediately around Portsmouth. People were awakened when the house walls trembled and crockery and window panes rattled. The tremor came soon after 5 o'clock and was felt in places as far afield as Swanmore, Twyford and Alsford. Conflicting theories have been advanced, ranging from a major undersea explosion to a minor earthquake.
25 years ago, October the 21st, 1988, National Trust favours hunting. Fox, hare and deer hunting could be banned on the Hinton Ampler estate through villages of Mottisfont and Selborne and Bramshire Common in the New Forest if National Trust members support a resolution to end blood sports on the charity's 500,000 acres across England and Wales. The Trust does not want to be forced to call a halt to hunting on its land, and has recommended its 1,500,000 members to vote against the proposal at the AGM next Saturday. Hunting is part of countryside tradition and should be allowed if it does not harm nature conservation programmes, said Nikki Creed, information officer for the South. Hampshire is the county with the worst record for mysterious cat disappearances, according to a survey published this week. The survey, which was undertaken by the charity National Pet Watch, covered 53 counties. Joan Wien, National Coordinator of Pet Watch believes the results clearly suggest that in Hampshire and several other counties, cat theft has become an organised crime on a massive scale.
Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment this week is headed, "Does City Centre Really Need This?" Most people would be surprised that Hampshire County Council is poised to introduce a 20-mile-an-hour speed limit throughout Winchester City Centre. There has been a notable lack of public consultation or debate about the issue. As reported this week, new limits could be introduced as soon as next April. The County Council was asked for clarification on Tuesday but did not respond in time for publication. The key question raised by Councillor Robert Sanders is whether these limits are necessary. It is many years since there has been a fatal traffic incident involving a pedestrian in the city centre. Most potential traffic pedestrian problems, spots have received safety design features to limit the chances of accident. The AA certainly has doubts, and this newspaper agrees. Few people would dispute 20-mile-an-hour zones are a good idea near schools, but does the whole of a city centre need to be constrained in this way? The AA raises the issue of the impact on users such as buses and deliveries. It would be ludicrous to see police enforcers potentially prosecuting any driver who recklessly races along at 21 miles an hour, which is slower than many cyclists. And first person this week is now read by Michael. Thank you, Michael.
This is the Ronald Allison piece, and it's headed, "More Facts, Please." And thank you, Harry. So, the first stage of the decisions on the future of Winchester's River Park Leisure Centre will be taken next month. It is then, according to the leader of the Winchester City Council, Councillor Keith Wood, that the council will be asked to refurbish or rebuild or do nothing. I sincerely hope that by then all of us, not just the council members, will have been better informed about the various possibilities that has so far been the case. Even so, two matters are clear to me. The first is that to do nothing is not an option. The second is that it would be utterly wrong to build on the River Park grounds as we know them and appreciate them. Please leave them, that very special, well-used and beautiful area, well alone. Barring any other suitable site somehow becoming available, that seems to leave two alternatives. Either build an entirely new centre at Bar End or rebuild on the existing site. What would be involved in both those enterprises is what we need to know. Feasibility, timings, conveniences, inconveniences, short-term and long-term consequences, benefits, or otherwise, to not only those living in the city, but in the wider catchment area as well. And perhaps, above all else, costings. What can we really afford to pay? What's the appropriate spaces for the latest developments? Now, I'm well aware that not everyone in Hampshire is particularly concerned about all this. There are other matters that interest many of us. Take football, for example. Oh dear, now I've lost at least half of you still reading on, but I do want to draw attention to a book that will certainly interest and entertain supporters of both Southampton and Portsmouth football clubs. As both Saints and Pompey fans will need no reminding, Harry Redknapp managed both clubs, and in fact he was in charge of Fratton Park, then moved to St Mary's before returning to Portsmouth. While he was at Southampton, the Saints were relegated from the Premier Division, while a little further along, the South Coast, he took their great rivals to Wembley to win the FA Cup. Before that somewhat surprising spell of to-ing and fro-ing, he managed both Bournemouth and West Ham United. Since leaving Portsmouth for the second time, he's been the boss at Tottenham Hotspur and is now at Queen's Park Rangers. His autobiography, Harry Always Managing, written with that excellent journalist Martin Samuel, is a splendid read for all football fans, whatever their club. Beyond that, though, this story of a genuine character who has certainly been through it may well entertain those with very little interest in the beautiful game itself. Harry, the East Ender who came south, a man who most definitely had an impact on Hampshire.
Belgarum's alternative look at the news this week comprises three items, and the first is read by Sheila. Thank you.
And the first one is entitled, "Out of Their Belfry, But Ringers Still Honour William." Twyford bell ringers had to break with a tradition spanning centuries when construction work forced them out of their belfry. Every year since the mid-18th century, the ringers at St. Mary's Church have gathered to ring the bells and enjoy a supper to remember how their predecessors inadvertently saved a man's life. But they were forced out while the tower was restored, which meant that for the first time since the war, the bells could not be rung to honour William Davis. The legend is that Davis was crossing the Downs on a foggy night. He realised he was lost, but then heard the church bells in the distance. Only when his horse stopped did he notice they were teetering on the edge of a quarry, where he would have almost certainly fallen to his death. As thanks to the church, William left a bequest in his will to fund an annual commemoration on the day for the bell ringers to ring in the morning and evening and enjoy a supper on him. Mr. Davis's bounty has long run dry, but the ringers continue the tradition, celebrating at the Bridge Hotel, Shawford, earlier this month. Sarah Hawkins, a former teacher at Peter Simmons, who lives in Shawford, has been ringing for about 20 years. She said, "It's always taken place, but then this goes and happens. We had the supper, which we pay for from our wedding funds. We read the will and toasted William Davis. Although the will is there, there doesn't seem to be anything about him other than that he heard the bells. It's always that he nearly fell down a chalk pit."
How Theatre Royal could have been a supermarket. More drawings from a bygone age when the character of the city of Winchester hung in the balance. Belgarum recently printed several drawings from the 1970s by architect Michael Morris as part of a campaign to save the city centre from radical redevelopment. These two show how Jury Street would have been affected. At first glance, it looks much as it does today. The classical portico of the library is still there, as is the Theatre Royal, and the distinctive de Lune buildings on the right. But the steel and glass office block replacing the building at the junction of Hyde Street, City Road, North Walls and Jury Street would have fundamentally altered the scale of the street scene. Mr. Morris was working for Hampshire County Council when he became aware of the Ring Road scheme. Now living in Devon, he says that he believes the city remains under threat. "I'm a bit alarmed at Barton Farm and the diversion of the Andover Road. I think places like Winchester are facing a difficult time ahead. It needs constant attention, drawn to the possible threats." Although the Theatre Royal survives to thrive to this day, it was a close-run thing, and in the early 1970s there was a serious plan to demolish and replace it with a supermarket.
And the third item, headed "Anything with Pigeon Toes," is accompanied by a photograph of a shoe shop window with a live pigeon sitting inside looking out. Thanks to Aaron Brown of Kingsworthy for sending this photograph of a bewildered pigeon in Russell and Bromley's window in Winchester High Street on Monday lunchtime. Mr. Brown clearly loves a pun, and commented that the upmarket shoe shop's autumn sale must be especially good, as you had to coo to get in. Belgarum idly wonders that if the bird in the store window had been a budgie, we would have said it was going cheap. But then again... Now we continue with items of general news, and the first item is read by Sheila. Thank you, Sheila.
And the first item is entitled "City First to Object to Woodmancock Turbines. Proposed wind farm will be detrimental to landscape." A new wind farm with 130-metre tall turbines on countryside north of Winchester has met with strong opposition from city council planners. Members voted to oppose the proposal for six turbines at Woodmancott Down near Micheldeba, amidst fears over noise levels and aviation safety. The plans are currently being considered by Basingstoke and Deane Borough Council. Winchester planners said it objected to Woodmancott when considered in conjunction with the Bullington Cross wind farm proposal, only about 3 miles away. Planning Officer Dave Diamond argued while the Woodmancott turbines might not be visible through the summer haze, on a clear winter's day they would be detrimental to the landscape. Councillors said the turbines would have an unacceptable impact upon the unspoilt landscape character of the area and its contribution to the setting of the South Downs National Park. However, the main points raised at this planning committee last Thursday were in response to the potentially harmful low-frequency noise emitted by the turning turbines. Councillor Malcolm Wright said in a statement submitted to the panel, "Unforeseen weather conditions, such as pressure stratification, can bounce noise going up, back down. This, along with the configuration of the noise-generating wind turbines and wind direction, can amplify the noise levels considerably." Emily Bray, a local resident, argued that she had conducted some research into wind farms elsewhere, and said reports had indicated mental and health issues associated with the low-level frequency noises emitted from the turbines. She called for further research to be done prior to any commitment to the project. Miss Bray said, "We live with our four young children in the house closest to the wind farm. The community is 100% against the proposal and there has been no consultation." Mr. Diamond confirmed he'd also seen evidence put forward by the MOD relating to the nearby site at Bullington Cross, located 7 kilometres from Woodmancott, which indicated concerns over interference with air traffic control radar. Speaking on Tuesday, Jonathan Mosley of the SOS Hampshire Downs Action Group welcomed Winchester's stance. He said, "We are pleased and encouraged by their words, strongly object, and their concerns over aviation safety and noise. The cumulative effect of these wind farms is something that has to be considered. There is not a great distance between Woodmancott and Bullington. If one is permitted, how can you object to the second? It would be the thin end of the wedge." Meanwhile, Winchester MP Steve Brine has welcomed new strengthened guidance from the government over onshore wind planning applications. Speaking after a visit to Woodmancott Down, where he met campaigners from the SOS Hampshire Downs group, he said the government have made it clear the need for renewable energy does not automatically override environmental protections and the views of local communities should be listened to.
Westminster Diary is written by Steve Brine, who is MP for Winchester and Chandlesford. "The past 3.5 years have allowed me to do some incredible things and meet some amazing people. Before last weekend, however, that had not included attending the birthday party of a railway station, but I even managed that recently, as Chandlesford Station marked 10 years since its opening in 2003. It really is testament to the original vision that this station is now part of the fabric and is well used by my constituents. So renewed thanks from us all to Three Rivers Rail, Sustrans, and County Councillor Colin Davidovitz, who together made this happen. Sticking with trains and as passenger numbers continue to rise across my patch, it's no wonder the subject is seldom far from my inbox. That is why I have arranged for the boss of Southwest Trains to come and answer our questions on Thursday, November the 14th. If you are a constituent and would like to be there, please visit www.stevebrine.com/asksWT. As widely reported by the Chronicle last year, demanded a huge focus from me to engage with Hampshire County Council over the issue of primary school places in Winchester. They responded well, and £10.2 million is now being spent on what I predict will be a stunning new all-through facility at Westgate and expanded provision at a string of other schools in the city. And it's not just in Winchester itself where the need is growing. It was a pleasure to open the new Year 2 classroom at St Mary's, Twyford, this month, and to visit Colden Common Primary School where there is a growing demand and a complex debate to be had, which must be led by the school, around expansion. I recently met with a group of parents at a special street surgery in Colden Common, and it's clear there is great anxiety about the short and long-term future, especially if the planned new homes are built on Main Road. I'm actively engaging with the council, the schools and the parents, as you would expect. From schools to farming, and it was useful to welcome Environmental Secretary Owen Paterson to Winchester last week, where I hosted a round table with arable, dairy feed and food producers at the wonderful Chestnut Horse pub. In a wide-ranging discussion, we covered milk prices and the reform of the Common Agricultural Policy and, of course, bovine TB. Finally, I said I have met some amazing people, and last week was a very special one as I finally got to meet Her Majesty the Queen. She's every bit as remarkable and charming as I was told, and we had a most amusing conversation about the search for our own King Alfred. Suffice to say, I think royal ears will now be pricked when and if we have news from the Hyde 900 team.
Molly thanks her lucky stars at 100. Luck and the support of a loving family. Those are the ingredients that a Winchester woman says have helped her reach her 100th birthday. Molly Allnut celebrated with family and friends with a party at the care home where she lives. Born in Suffolk and educated in Salisbury, Mrs. Allnut moved to Winchester when she met her husband Percy in Hursley. They married and moved to Greenhill Road in full flood in 1938, where she lived until she moved to Tegfield House 8 years ago. Her son Derek, aged 68, from West Wellow, said, "She's done fantastically well. No one would think she's 100. And that is accompanied by a photograph of Molly holding her message from the Queen and surrounded by her family and staff of the care home.
Jemima inspires brother and pal to triathlon success. A little boy from Winchester has completed his very first triathlon to raise money for his disabled sister. Ollie Siverett from Norlands Drive, Otterbourne, completed his run, cycle and swim in record time, along with friend Arthur Herron. The boys, aged 8, ran 1.2 kilometres, swam 600 metres and cycled over 10 kilometres, all in one day, to raise a staggering £1,500 for Ollie's sister Jemima, who needs life-changing surgery on her spine. Jemima, who was born with quadriplegia, a rare form of cerebral palsy, requires surgery and intense physiotherapy so she can eventually walk unaided. Jemima's family have launched Jemima's Journey, a campaign to raise £90,000 to send her to America for the specialist surgery. Ollie was inspired to push himself physically across a range of activities that he wished his sister could do better. Ollie, a Compton School pupil, said, "I'd never done anything like this before, but I had great fun. It was really hard, but it was worth it to raise funds for my sister." Ollie's mum, Jo, said, "The boys' stamina was fantastic. They wanted to keep going and doing further distances, but we wanted them to complete everything, so we had to curb their enthusiasm." The family celebration at the start of the month, when Dad, Andrew, and 20 of his friends rode 60 miles round the Isle of Wight, raising a staggering £40,000. And this is accompanied by a photo of Ollie and Arthur, his friend, and by the parents and sister Jemima.
New local bank passes first hurdle. Initial funding agreed by business secretary. Funding for the first local bank in Hampshire has been confirmed by Vince Cable's announcement that the government has agreed crucial funding. At a conference in Eastleigh last Friday, the business secretary confirmed a £250,000 grant with a following £950,000 loan to the Winchester-based Community Bank, which is called Local First, as part of the Green Growth Business Fund. Local First, currently a community interest company, was set up by Professor Richard Werner from the University of Southampton and several colleagues to replicate banks in Germany. Professor Werner, who has lived in Winchester for the past 10 years, is the founding director of the Centre for Banking, Finance and Sustainable Development at the university. The whole idea for local banking started in Britain in 1810, when the first savings banks were introduced, he said. But over time, that model got eroded and everything got larger. I think the financial crisis has made it clear to everyone that there is a problem in the UK. We only have five banks that account for 95% of banking deposits, whereas Germany's big banks account for just 12%, and as a result you get a very different economy. When the issue struck, they didn't have to slow down their lending, and small and medium enterprises, SMEs as they're called, continued. Professor Werner has been raising capital for the operation over the last 2 years, alongside fellow directors Charles Baslington, Martin Reed, Mike Battersby, Andy Rings and Kostas Voutsianas, and successfully secured the grant under the Regional Growth Fund. We have an ambitious plan to get the banking licence by the end of next year. At the moment, we are a CIC, but we need to raise capital, Professor Werner said. We need another £6 million locally, and it looks like we're going to have the first £2 million shortly. We hope the local authorities will take an interest because we don't want to just attract the investors. The idea for the bank is to remain local and to work within its own parameters, catering for Winchester customers. Once the money has been raised and they have received their banking licence, the group hopes to start trading by the start of 2014 with a much bigger balance sheet, close to the tune of £80 million. Professor Werner added, "What we have seen with the bigger banks is that they have lost their common sense, and we want to keep the relationship with the customer by having a smaller scale operation."
Homeowners' anger after manhole leaks. Complaints of foul stench on new estate. Sewage overflowed onto the streets of a new housing development in Winchester, according to residents. People living in Abbott's Walk reported a foul stench last Friday afternoon as a manhole began to seep liquid across Northanger Drive, Lee View and Mansfield Road. On Saturday, Louise Kahn, aged 42, of Northanger Drive, said she alerted the developer Redrow immediately. They merely sent along a road sweeper, which was about as useful as a dirty mop on a muddy floor, she said. Contractors parked their vehicles and equipment in the area that was worst affected, so that area was not cleaned at all. No site manager or Redrow rep has yet been to view the affected site or indeed been in contact with local residents about the matter, which is truly appalling. It's not very pleasant. Someone who walked through here earlier said they could smell it quite badly. I'm concerned there is no signage and no residents have been warned unless I've spoken to them myself. So goodness knows where it's been spreading. Some residents took to Twitter to vent their frustration. One post said, "Serious sewage spillage at Abbott's Walk and Redrow are making a mess of it." Another read, "What's that smell at Abbott's Walk, Winchester?" After visiting the site on Saturday, Councillor Dominic Hiscock said, "I could not see raw sewage, but there was definitely a vile smell and it has not been treated." Following an article on Hampshire Chronicle website, the road was finally disinfected on Monday, and a director from Redrow visited residents to apologise. In a statement, Redrow said, "We wish to apologise to residents of Abbott's Walk for this unfortunate incident, which occurred as a result of a drain being accidentally damaged while digging on site. This caused a temporary blockage and subsequent discharge onto the road from a manhole. The blockage was fixed immediately and the area pumped out. The road was then swept, washed down, and a further inspection ensured no health risk was posed. However, to reassure residents who have expressed concern over the weekend, we have now disinfected the area.
Actresses honoured as graduates reap harvest of degrees. It was a time to look forward to the future, but also reflect on the past, writes Lauren Howard. Thousands of students enjoyed their graduation day from the University of Winchester at the city's cathedral. While they focused on their prospects to come, others were rewarded for success already achieved. Miriam Margoyles and Celia Imrie, renowned for their work in film, television and theatre, received honorary doctorates on Friday. Celia, an Olivia Award-winning actress known for her role as Philippa Moorcroft in Dinner Ladies, said, "It means a hell of a lot because I never went to university. In fact, I never even did A-levels, so I hope they've got the right person and they're not making a terrible mistake. It's a huge honour. I can't quite believe it, but I'm thrilled. I looked up today that I'm related to a Bishop of Winchester from long ago, and I feel quite at home." Miriam Margoyles, a BAFTA-winning actress known to many for her portrayal of Edmund's strict Orthodox aunt in Blackadder, now devotes a great deal of time to her patronage of the Southampton and Winchester Visitors Group for asylum seekers. "They are the only means of support, and I feel it's a wonderful charity," she said. "This is not the first degree, but it's the first honorary degree and probably the only honorary degree I will get. My link with Winchester is my friend, Alan Knight, who was here when it was King Alfred's College. I'm humbled to be here, but I'm absolutely terrified of making a speech. As an actress, you're given a script." Others to be honoured included the novelist Patrick Gale and choreographer Zoe Colding. Meanwhile, Winchester's 808th mayor, Chris Pines, a former Winnell Primary School teacher, received an honorary fellowship. He said, "I was absolutely knocked out when I found out, and it's nice to follow in the footsteps of Colin Firth, who got an honorary doctorate a few years ago, and whom I taught long ago." Another honorary fellowship recipient was Lady Joan Appleyard, who as Miss Joan Jefferson was headmistress of St Swithin's School, Winchester, for 8.5 years. The Alumnus of the Year award went to Jack Highwood, founder of the Elephant Livelihood Initiative Environment in the Monduli province near the Vietnamese border. The project started in 2007 and aims to improve health and welfare of elephants through research, monitoring and a mobile veterinary programme.
This next piece is headed "Ex-MP Too Old to Face Court Case." Police Commissioner candidate Michael Mates has avoided prosecution for alleged electoral fraud, partly because he is too old. The Crown Prosecution Service said that although there was enough evidence to prosecute Mr. Mates, who was defeated by Simon Hayes in the election, there would be no formal charges. The CPS said that due to the former politician's age, along with a number of other factors, a prosecution would not be in the public interest. But the 79-year-old former minister and MP reacted angrily, saying he would welcome a day in court to publicly clear his name over the accusation that he had misrepresented his home address. He said, "This has left me between a rock and a hard place, and I find it unacceptable. I would have been perfectly happy to answer any charges in court, because I know I have done nothing wrong." In the statement, the CPS said, "Having considered the reasons why Michael Mates was at the address provided, we have determined that there is sufficient evidence for a realistic prospect of conviction in this case." However, In view of the likely penalty that would be imposed, Michael Mate's age, the fact that he... the fact that the election did not have to be rerun and that his culpability was relatively low, we do not consider that a prosecution would be in the public interest. The investigation stemmed from his claim to be living in Christchurch Road, Winchester, during the campaign, and his main address is near Chichester in West Sussex. Mr. Mate said, "I find it extraordinary that the CPS has said this to a journalist before letting me know. This doesn't seem to me to be natural justice." He later sent a statement to the Hampshire Chronicle, and this is it. "Since it is only this newspaper which has informed me so far that the CPS has issued a statement giving reasons why they do not intend to proceed against me, I am left in the impossible position of still not knowing what it is that I am alleged to have done, which is wrong. Having acted entirely on professional advice in the whole process, I cannot understand what it is that has caused the CPS to arrive at their decision. I do not believe that it is natural justice to be in a position where I cannot publicly justify what I did, because I have not been told what it is that I might have been accused of." He has complained to the Independent Police Complaints Commission about the handling of the matter by both the Hampshire and the Thames Valley Police Forces, which were called in to investigate. The latest news comes just a week after the CPS announced that it would not prosecute Mr. Hayes over a similar claim that he misrepresented his home address during the election in November last year. Mr. Hayes said it was Mr. Mates who had complained about his alleged misrepresentation of his home address. In response, Mr. Mates said, "I wrote to the Chief Constable of Hampshire saying that if you were saying that about me, you ought to look at him. The law must apply to all. I do not regret doing it."
Steve Brine takes first step on ministerial ladder. Winchester MP appointed PPS to minister. Winchester and Chandler Ford MP Steve Brine has taken the first step onto the ministerial ladder. Prime Minister David Cameron has appointed Mr. Brine Parliamentary Private Secretary, that's PPS, to Mike Penning, the Minister of State at the Department for Work and Pensions, and also Minister for Disabled People. Mr. Brine said on Monday, "It was very nice to be asked, and I'm really looking forward to working at the heart of one of the biggest government departments on one of the coalition's most ambitious reform programmes. My focus will remain on my constituency work, and I hope this new role will allow me to provide an even stronger voice for the area inside government." A PPS acts as the eyes and ears of a minister, liaising with other MPs and helping with policy queries. Mr. Brine added, "My priorities are reducing the false economy of welfare dependency, which is neither fair to those it traps or those who have to pay what were ever-rising welfare costs the economy can't afford. All the above are valid in my constituency as anywhere else. People here who work hard and pay their way don't want to see rocketing welfare bills. I will also be arguing passionately when, if I get my chance, that we honour our commitment to keep the key pensioner benefits we promised in our manifesto, such as bus pass and winter fuel allowance." The Department of Work and Pensions has come under fire recently for cuts to benefits such as the bedroom tax policy, but Mr. Brine said he was not worried about any political opponents using his new role against him. He added, "Others can play politics. I will just do my job as best I can, promoting the well-argued policies of our coalition government."
City set to sparkle again for festivities. Ice rink and Christmas market return next month. It is fast becoming known as the Christmas capital of the UK. Now Winchester is set to stake its claim once again with a fun, festive lineup set to draw in hundreds of thousands of visitors. And with its traditional market and ice rink back again, Winchester Cathedral will be right at the heart of it. The market and ice rink will open on Thursday, November the 21st, after a ceremony featuring carol singing, fireworks and skating displays, all compared by Wave FM's Steve Power. Now in its 8th year, the market in Cathedral Close is considered among the best in Europe, with high-quality food and gifts available up until December the 22nd. For the first time this year, the annual Lantern Parade will not take place on the market's opening night, but rather a week later on November the 28th. The procession will start at the Great Hall at 6 p.m, moving down the High Street and finishing at the Cathedral at 6:45 p.m, ahead of an evening of entertainment headlined by 1950s band The Cadillacs. Lanterns made from willow and tissue paper can be made by families at supervised workshops at the Brook Shopping Centre from 10 a.m. to 12 noon and 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. on October the 30th, November the 1st, November the 16th and November the 17th. The Cathedral is also running special tours, including a twilight tour where visitors can see Winchester's Christmas lights sparkle from the top of the Cathedral Tower. Meanwhile, there will be plenty of Christmas services at the Cathedral, including the Lord Lieutenant's Christmas Concert on December the 13th, hosted by television presenter Alan Titchmarsh. Family services take place at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. on Christmas Eve, with a midnight Eucharist starting at 11:30 p.m. The ice rink runs until January the 5th and is open daily from 10 a.m. to 7:45 p.m.
Homes struck by lightning. Fire crews were called out in Winchester after lightning struck houses on Tuesday. Two engines attended Fairfield Road and Cranworth Road in full flood, where residents experienced torrential rain and a lightning strike at around 8 p.m. Crew manager Nick Mills of Winchester Fire Station said a row of 12 houses was affected, but no damage was done. Several people reported television, broadband and telephone services knocked out. Sandy Newman, retired of Fairfield Road, said the strike was so severe that neighbours from nearby streets came to make sure she was okay. "My friend phoned me and asked me if I'd had any problems with the storm, but then I hadn't. And then the heavens opened and all the lights went out, and here and next door," she said, "the whole house seemed to vibrate, and then we all rushed outside to see what had happened." Sam Bridgeworth, a 20-year-old student, said his housemates were quite shaken. "There was a massive flash of light and the house kind of shook. The firemen came to check to see we're all right, and everyone went down the pub." In Shirrell Heath, near Bishop's Waltham, around 45 firefighters tackled a roof fire after a lightning strike in Winters Road at about 8:20 p.m.
Colourful theme for Naomi Callender. Sibling rivalry has been cast aside at two Winchester hospices. A calendar made by brothers and sisters of children and teenagers with life-limiting conditions at Naomi House and Jack's Place has gone on sale to raise funds. It follows a recent sibling activity day where professional photographer Catherine Skinner ran a photography competition with the top 12 pictures selected for the calendar. Jenny Astle, sibling support worker at the Sutton Scotney Hospices, said, "We chose a theme of colours to give the children a really broad and exciting range of subjects to draw from. The photographs that they managed to produce from it were absolutely outstanding." She added, "We love the idea of getting the siblings to create this calendar. We always try to get them as involved as possible in the work we do. This project was the perfect opportunity for them to support their brothers and sisters while getting the chance to be creative at the same time." The calendar costs £4.95, with all the proceeds going to support services, and is available at Naomi House charity shops.
former detective on case to reduce crime in Winchester. A former Hampshire police detective inspector has teamed up with Winchester business leaders to tackle crime in the city. Jane Bastock has been appointed crime reduction officer at Winchester Business Improvement District, a new role that will work in partnership with the police and city council. She recently retired as Detective Inspector for Winchester and East Hampshire and has more than 30 years' experience. Mrs. Bastock said, "We are determined to make Winchester a safer place. I welcome both this stronger unified approach to reduce crime and disorder in the city and the opportunity to help develop and support local businesses." She is experienced in managing complex crime, domestic violence, and child protection, and will be involved in schemes such as ShopWatch and PubWatch to ensure a safe environment for city shops, bars, and restaurants. Chris Turner, BID Executive Director, said, "We are delighted to have Jane Bastock on the team. She has a wealth of experience and is very well connected and highly respected, with a proven track record of developing positive working relationships within the local agencies and the wider community. She will also work closely with the members of ShopWatch and PubWatch to help improve the city's evening economy." Catherine Turner, BID manager, added, "This important new appointment is a significant step forward for Winchester BID. We've not had a dedicated role devoted to this before. The aim is to also address the underlying causes of crime in order to achieve a permanent improvement to the quality of life in our community."
Neighbours call for CCTV near nightclub. Residents' concerns over soon-to-open venue. Residents living near a soon-to-open nightclub in the city centre are calling for an additional CCTV camera to prevent problems at a venue. The former Porthouse in Upper Brook Street is set to reopen imminently as a vodka bar, and people living in the vicinity say they're concerned there could be late-night problems. Michael Coker-Davis, chairman of Parchment Brooks Residents Association, said, "We have asked for a CCTV camera in Upper Brook Street, and the council has shied away on cost grounds. This is going to be the biggest and busiest nightclub in the city in an inappropriate location, because we have a lot of elderly families here." The owners said they would have extra staff to prevent problems, but they have no influence on what happens up the street. "I've no doubt that what takes place inside the club will be fine, but what happens 200 yards down the road won't be. We've suggested relocating a camera from a quieter part of the city. We want them to do this before we get a problem, not 6 months after we get them. I will give residents confidence and make them feel the council is listening to what we are doing. I'm sure it will give them confidence. Residents met the nightclub bosses and council licensing staff last month to discuss issues before it opened. Mr. Coker-Davis said we had a meeting that was sensible but direct, and we have stated if we have anything like the problems we previously had, then local residents will react to that. What I said to the owners is, I have no problem with them running a business as long as it does not affect the lives of residents. If it does, our aim is to close the place down." A spokesman for the city council said a camera was already in place which covers the nightclub and some of the surrounding area. He added, "There are strict rules about where cameras can be located, and it is unlikely that the council could install another unless specific incidents required it. The licence for the venue has many detailed conditions designed to ensure that it operates appropriately, including a requirement for the installation and the maintenance of a CCTV system with recording facilities which is satisfactory to the police." The Chronicle tried to contact the nightclub managers, but no one responded at the time of going to press.
Councillor quits over conflict of interest. She was the top politician who was to decide the fate of four care homes across Hampshire. But County Councillor Anna McNair Scott has resigned as Hampshire's adult care chief after admitting that she failed fully to disclose her interests. She has spent several weeks studying plans to axe a series of homes that the authority says would cost £10 million to modernise. They include Nightingale Lodge in Romsey, the Deeside complex near Basingstoke, and Cranley Paddock Lyndhurst, the only specialist dementia unit in the New Forest. Councillor McNair Scott was due to make the decision on whether to replace them with extra care apartments for pensioners. But the issue over her declaration of interest was raised at a public meeting staged by campaigners battling to save the Deeside complex. They accused her of failing to reveal that her husband, Nigel, works for a company which is in partnership with a firm building 179 extra care units in Stratford-upon-Avon. Now Councillor McNair Scott has admitted breaking the rules and has resigned the county as the County Council's executive member for adult care. Referring to her husband's business link, she said, "It has nothing to do with Hampshire and I didn't think to declare it. It was an honest error and was not an attempt to conceal anything. But I had a very sensitive decision to make and realised I had to stand down. In public life, you have to be extremely careful to disclose everything you should disclose. I should have dotted the I's and crossed the T's." Councillor McNair Wilson quit after her breach of rules was brought to the attention of County Council leader Roy Perry. He raised the issue with Councillor McNair Scott as soon as she returned from an adult and children's social care conference in Harrogate. "Anna at once offered her resignation from the Cabinet," said Councillor Perry. "She expressed her deep regret at her oversight in failing to provide a complete disclosure of interests as required in accordance with the County Council's Members' Code of Conduct." Councillor McNair Scott will continue to represent her Candover wards. The decision on the future of the care homes, scheduled to take place on November the 28th, will be taken by the Cabinet as a whole.
Nepalese see their way to a better future. 15 ex-Gurkhas and Nepalese elders took up an opportunity for free eye tests in Winchester last Thursday. The event was the result of work between the Crafts and English Exchange Group and Tesco Extra. The Crafts and English Exchange Group aims to boost confidence and improve the English of relocated Nepalese communities, since a lack of proficiency can exclude them from important services. 15 pensioners visited the Winnell store on the day for examination, and all 15 required glasses. Dawn Conchi, a volunteer at Winchester Area Community Action, helped to organise the event. She said this was a fantastic day and is a big achievement for the elders, who are now feeling much more confident. Having their eyesight back will really help them to be more independent and to feel safer in the local community. "I was really touched when Callie Meyer, who I've worked with for the last 11 months, came out of her eye test and gave me a huge hug. It made me realise just how important it was." Will Edwards, opticians manager at Tesco Extra in Winnell, said, "We were delighted to be able to welcome members of the local Nepalese community to our store and to provide them with free eye tests. We had a fantastic day. Colleagues really enjoyed being able to offer their help, and we are already making plans for future visits." And this is accompanied by a very colourful picture of the elderly Nepalese people.
This little piece, which is news in brief, talks about the Winnell Junction works, which are to start shortly. Major works are due to begin in Winnell next week as part of a scheme to improve the bottleneck Junction 9 roundabout connecting the A34 and the M3. The works are due to start on Monday, October the 28th, and will include the widening of the top of Eastern Lane to three lanes, as well as more traffic lights. The work will result in overnight lane closures as well as occasional complete closures. The dates of these closures will be advertised in advance on road signs and on the scheme's website. Vehicles travelling between the M3 and the A34 will be diverted along the A303 and M3, and M3 traffic will not be able to exit at Junction 9 to access the Winnall roundabout. Due to a bridge height restriction on the B3047 London Road, large vehicles travelling to or from the A33, that's Kingsworthy, will be diverted via Alsford and the A31. For more information, contact the Highways Agency on 0300 123 5000 or email hainfo@highwaysgsi.gov.uk.
That concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Lorna Chorley and Michael Turner. Thanks to our copying and dispatch and studio preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Sheila Shepherd.
Goodbye.
And Michael Wilde.
Goodbye.
And from me, Tom Williams, goodbye, and do enjoy the week ahead. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. And when you put your label in the wallet, please ensure the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside the wallet. And finally, another reminder that British summertime ends on Sunday and clocks go back 1 hour. Thank you.